Disclaimer. The views and opinions that you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays, 5:30 p.m. Pacific Time on YouTube. Check out my Twitter feed, ANNZAC, for more. Enjoy the show! Everybody, welcome to AnCast. I'm Zach Birchie, back on the show after, I think it's been a couple years at this point. It's the Anime World Order crew. Always happy to have these guys back. First, I would say, I don't know, do people perceive you as the leader of AWO, Daryl? Are you the leader? Is there a leader?
I am not the leader. Much like Chaos, this is a faction of equal parties all conspiring, but I guess, handling the email and the website as well as the feed, so maybe people see me as like a front face, but right. Not really.
And your work is also featured prominently in Otaku USA Magazine and on Anime News Network.
That is correct, and I am definitely not putting off assignments for either of those things to join
you
here.
Yeah, you owe me two different pieces right now.
Don't know what you're talking about.
Also joining us is Gerald Rathclub. Gerald, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a while. I was trying to think of the last time I was on. Was it for Watamote?
Maybe. No. We did one of these like a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years. It was in 2015, I think.
Okay.
So it was a while ago. That was also the last time Clarissa Grafeo was here. Clarissa, thank you so much for coming by.
Hey, yeah, I was about to say, I think I've only been on here once, but
just
it was
the
great.
One. Yeah, just the one time. But we're happy to have you back. Since it's been such a long time, I thought we would, you know, all of us are media hounds. We do nothing with our lives but cram media into our faces. So I thought we would start maybe with movies here. And I'm very curious about this. I want to know what your favorite movie of last year was, and I want to start with Daryl on that one.
Wow, last year feels like a century ago, and I have to like think about like what the heck happened in 2017.
Yeah.
Certainly, there were a few noteworthy ones. Some just sort of came in out of nowhere that I, you know, was not expecting to like a whole lot. But like right now, since you put me on the spot, like all I can think of are like these big blockbustery types of movies like Star Wars and stuff like that, and Guardians of the Galaxy and whatever else the Disney Zaibatsu Megacorp owns in our lives at this point.
Right. Well,
yeah,
Star Wars,
like
there's
so many things happening that it's like thinking back to January last year, that feels like a lifetime ago.
It's true. January this year feels like a lifetime ago.
It does.
Yes, it does.
So you would say, what? What was your answer?
An excellent job of not answering that.
Yeah,
question.
That was a
the reason is because it's a difficult thing for me to answer. Like,
okay, I'll go if you don't.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, I'll give people a little bit to think. Like, I really did like Get Out a lot, but I have to go with probably, I hope this came out last year. I think it did. Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah, it came out.
It did come out last year,
yes.
And I was
I have not
blown
actually
away
seen that yet
by how good that was, because that was the last thing I was expecting to be good.
We will save half a day, Clarissa, and we'll watch it.
Yeah,
you need
at
least half a day.
Yeah, because you got to watch part one.
It's 8.5 hours.
Did John Wick 2 come out last year?
Did what?
Was that John Wick 2?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, because that's another like important, you know, like high watermark
right.
of cinema.
Yes, I know. Right? I was thinking of like, is that, you know, maybe the choice? Like, I don't know.
That is a really good one. Yeah.
Clarissa, what was yours?
Oh my gosh! I mean, Get Out was fabulous. It might be that. I did really love Thor Ragnarok, of course.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Really,
you're
going to
say the Boss Baby.
Well, clearly, I mean, that was the pinnacle of cinema.
Yeah.
Soon to be Netflix series.
Soon to be Academy Award winning.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not going to win that.
And I think Spider-Man Homecoming too, which I also quite enjoyed.
Yeah, I think I kind of want to see that again. It was very, very entertaining, that movie. It was very enjoyable. Like, I don't know that it was, like, a lot to chew on, but it was good.
On the subject, it was very entertaining, but, you know, not a lot to chew on. I was a fan of Valerian, which no one else likes but me, and I will defend that to the death. But
Daryl, it is
you
and
people don't seem to like it very much.
Gerald,
you're the only two people.
Y'all are just never invited back on the show.
I know. But I believed in that movie so much that I imported it from the UK so I could have it in 3D with the fake 3D lenticular cover and everything.
That movie was more disappointing than The Phantom Menace. Like, it was more of a letdown for me than Attack of the Clones.
That's rough.
How much money did that movie lose? That was like $100 million.
Like something like that.
Probably like 200. I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, so Blade Runner lost $80 million. So, like, the amount of money something loses is not necessarily indicative of quality, but, like.
Oh, no, not at all.
But I hated Valerian.
Like, is always on the losing end.
No, I wanted it to be The Fifth Element, too, and it was not. And the movie that it was, the movie that it was,
Dave Riley super nostalgia for The Fifth Element that everyone else my age does.
Well, I have a Zach Birchie super nostalgia for The Fifth Element, and like, I saw that movie like 15 times in the theaters or whatever. Like, it was formative for me, and he had a chance to make something else kind of like it, but casting and the plot, the story, I think, just fucking sank it to the bottom of the ocean. It was very upset. I mean. Like, you made an argument for it. I know, like, Mike Toole has made an argument for Valerian, and I've heard the arguments for it. It's just, man, I was just so let down. And over Christmas, so of course, over Christmas, I went to visit family in New Orleans from Los Angeles, which is like a 4-hour flight, and that was the movie both ways. So,
oh wow,
yeah. Oh,
lucked out.
Yeah,
I've had many a chance to reevaluate.
Valerian is like everyone else's rage towards Star Wars.
It's not everyone else's rage towards Star Wars.
Star Wars is just fascinating to me.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I'm just fascinated by like the dialogue with Star Wars, because I mean it's like when you release a nerd movie of that hugeness that is that divisive.
Right. Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those things that like it's so huge with being Star Wars and being like a return to the original, some of the original cast and all of that. I feel like it's maybe one of those things that nobody was really going to be happy with it. It's like no matter what they did, probably somebody was going to be pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, like they made a really challenging movie though. Like thematically, like they made something that is very challenging when you consider like what you would maybe consider the average person wants out of a Star Wars movie or expects out of a Star Wars movie. So like they did something pretty, they went out on a limb on that. It was the most risk-taking I had seen in a big blockbuster movie in a while.
I admit I am kind of let down just because, of course, the whole year was leading up to the release of Shape of Water, which I have not actually been able to see.
Oh, you still haven't seen
it. So clearly my life is not complete until I can see Guillermo del Toro's Ode to Banging Hot Fishermen.
Yeah.
Which is important.
Well, they're saying it might win Best Picture. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah,
that would be
might.
Amazing.
Eh. Jacob and I were both very lukewarm on the Shape of Water.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Both big, big time lukewarm on Shape of Water. It was a cute movie.
Do you typically like Del Toro stuff? Or
I have a tremendous amount of respect. The best movie he's ever made by a long shot was Pan's Labyrinth, like by a huge margin.
Pacific Rim.
Yeah, I don't think he. I know you disagree with that shit. But like,
no, I love Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, but you probably don't think it's his best movie.
I don't know. It's hard for me to rank.
You would probably say Blade 2.
Blade 2 is a very high watermark of a film.
Right?
What about Mimic? Mimic was very high up there, too.
It did have an alien autopsy, which Blade 2 also had a weird vampire autopsy.
It did.
And I don't know if The Shape of Water has a fishman autopsy, but
it does not.
It does.
It doesn't. No.
He's losing form.
But it is gross, and, you know, there's plenty of that shit in there. The only thing is, like, I think he's an incredible aestheticist. He's an amazing artist. I think he, I love his production design. I'm not in love with Del Toro's storytelling sensibilities. His scripts don't, like, The Shape of Water, I felt, could have had real impact. But instead, it was just cute. And I needed it, wanted it very much to be more than that.
You make him sound like he's, like, Zack Snyder caliber.
No. I'm just usually I usually just don't connect with his characters or his stories. Like Pacific Rim was the same way. Like it's spectacle and it looks cool and everything, and I can tell how much he loves this and how much he cares about it. But I do not connect with his characters, and his stories always feel left a little wanting. The I think Pan's Labyrinth was so meaningful because it had so much personal experience for him in it. Like mm-hmm. there was a lot of him in that movie. And I feel like that's why I connected with it more. The rest of the stuff, a lot of this other stuff, it's just geek fantasy. And that's cool, but it doesn't get me in the heart, you know? Like, it doesn't make me think a lot.
I have to love the guy just because he feels like if I were a director,
yeah,
I would make Pacific Rim if some idiot gave me, like, $200 million.
Yeah.
It was like, make whatever you want. I would have made Pacific Rim.
Can I just tell you, I want to...
Well, you would have made Crimson Peak.
Oh, jeez.
No, I think that's me. I think that's probably.
I really want to live in a world where someone gives you $200 million to make a movie. That would be fucking amazing.
Oh, my God.
But anyway. So, Daryl, you never settled on a favorite film. I guess you don't have one. Valerian.
Yeah, it's a little difficult for me to call, but I think maybe to be a super contrarian, I'm going to say my favorite film of last year was The Last Jedi.
All right. That was on my list as number three or four.
Yeah, but everyone's very mad at you for putting that on your list.
That's not true. In my bubble, everybody loved The Last Jedi. Okay, there's not that many people in my personal bubble who hated it. I just don't have that many.
Like, Dunkirk's not my favorite movie of the year. It's very like a great cinematic experience, and I'm really glad I saw it because the sound design and stuff is incredible, but I don't think it's my favorite movie of that year.
Okay. Did you think Dunkirk did a bad job explaining what was happening? Like,
Not really. I mean, I think everything that people are faulting for is by design.
You think so? I feel like he didn't describe what, like, to the audience, like, look, here is the situation they were in. Where are the Nazis? They're over here.
if you're critiquing Christopher Nolan for being like Mr. Super overly wordy exposition and stuff, he's like, well, here, have it without that. And here's an event that people should just know what went down. And I'm not going to tell you what happened because they didn't know what happened. You know, that's a film where there's not like,
oh, I get right
character.
Yeah, that's a good point that the soldiers on the ground wouldn't have known exactly what was happening anyway. So he wouldn't want to give you that. All right. I get it. I feel like as a history thing, though, like I was like, yo, I feel like the people in the audience maybe don't like if you didn't at least read the Dunkirk Wikipedia article before showing up to this, you
mean,
might not
like
know.
Atomic Blonde is like they have to explain what the fall of the Berlin Wall is. As Charlize Theron is beating the fuck out of all these people.
Oh, but, God, have we hit the point now where that has to be explained to people?
I think
definitely.
Evidently
so.
Definitely. Ooh. Of course.
Yep.
Like, for sure. And I think it's better.
I was on MTV.
I'm glad when it does explain it because people only pick up that information through shit like Atomic Blonde now. So at least they're learning about it somehow, right? Right?
A history lesson through Atomic Blonde. That is that is wonderful.
I didn't see that
I
movie.
All my history.
Oh, it's a terrific soundtrack at the very least. If you really want to, you know, get your new wave on. Atomic
oh, really?
Blonde is the film of 2017.
Maybe I mm-hmm. should. New wave. That sounds good.
it's a terrific soundtrack.
All right. So I had to do movies first. Now we got to get to games. So I guess on this one, I'll just ask you, what have you been playing lately that you really love? And on that one, I'm going to start with Clarissa.
Well, I've been slowly working my way through Final Fantasy 15, which is quite fun. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's like my favorite of the series or anything, but it is a lot more enjoyable than I expected it would be. It's very cute. It's very relaxing to play, just kind of that road trip feeling of just like driving around, looking at the scenery. There's something kind of soothing about it. I have been kind of up and down on Overwatch. Sometimes I play a lot. Lately, I've kind of fallen off of it a bit more. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. I've kind of fallen behind on a lot of stuff just because I've been sort of sidetracked with other things, and a lot of my list of things to play is like incredibly long RPGs.
Yeah.
to get through.
What about Hexcel's Infinite? Very deep and engaging game.
Yeah, well, I do love it. it is like one of my favorite puzzle games that I found, and I keep trying to find like another new puzzle game that is like that level of like the exact like sweet spot of like enough mental effort to keep you focused, but not enough to be stressful. It's very soothing.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I haven't picked up like a good puzzle game in a while. Like the last one I played a hell of a lot of was, it was an Adult Swim game that was like platform puzzle jumper or something like that.
Was the unicorn one?
No. It was, you were a little block man and you had like a gun and you would shoot bricks out and jump around and shoot bricks. Oh geez. Why can't I remember the name? Super Puzzle Platformer, I think is what it was called. But it was fun. It was very simple. But I haven't like played a good, like gotten addicted to a puzzle game in quite some time. I feel like that genre just moved to phones, and that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. I like a good puzzle game that I can just chill out with.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
And totally. Unfortunately, the mobile ones, it's like they're always trying to get you to do microtransactions. Yeah. So it's like, oh, I ran out of attempts, so now I have to wait for...
Yeah, it's just fucked through with free-to-play stuff, so
yeah,
it's not worth it. Anyway, wait 13 minutes to lay the next tile. All right, fuck this. are you playing like the complete version of Final Fantasy 15, like with all the DLC and everything?
I have like... I don't have all of the extra like character DLC and stuff. Okay. I'll probably pick that stuff up.
But when you finish it,
close to the end,
right?
Yeah.
Once you finish it, you'll play through like the revamped final chapter or whatever it is.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I keep toying with the idea of going back to Final Fantasy 15, and I just I don't know. I can't. I played like a ton of games over Christmas, but since then I have hardly touched anything. Like you were talking
about that game. That game has got such a nice like beginning, first eight chapters or so, real nice and chill and fun. Even if the story goes absolutely nowhere,
it was too chill for me, too slow.
I can understand that. And then as soon as this story starts going somewhere, then I watch Clarissa's stream and I'm waiting what you'll think, Clarissa.
Yeah.
Well, Gerald, that brings us to you. So I feel like I kind of know what you've been playing, but tell us a little bit about it.
I just finished Wolfenstein 2. I usually try to keep it to like one game per platform.
Mm. Not Spear of Destiny from 20 years ago.
No, right. Yes.
New Colossus.
Colossus, which is an absolutely glorious schlock B movie in the form of a video game. I have not seen such glory. Like the stuff that happens in that game is so schlocky and stupid and wonderful. I just enjoy it so much. Like there's literally a scene where a guy gets his head cut off and transplanted on another body.
And that's like the game.
Yes, it's tremendous fun. They have like a perfect the Wolfenstein games in general, the new ones I've liked a whole lot.
Yeah, I'm about
that's for PC. Oh, go on.
Oh, I was just gonna talk a little bit about Wolfenstein. Yes. Would you say that the second half was stronger than the first of that game? Like story wise and everything, would you say the second half was a little stronger?
I think so. The character moments in that game, when they tried for character moments, were surprisingly strong, and those mostly happen in the second half.
Mm.
In terms of the game itself, yeah, I would agree. So I would agree. It got better.
Because I'm about halfway through, and I don't want to be misleading here. I am not playing Wolfenstein 2. I can't. It makes me terribly motion sick. I have a real problem with PS4 shooters. I usually play shooters on my PC because the frame rate, for whatever reason, the frame rate...
30 frames a second might be getting to you, and you may need the 60.
The frame rate on PC, for whatever reason, doesn't make me sick. On PS4, on my TV, it does, and even with like frame smoothing and stuff, it still makes me like really sick. But I really wanted to see the story because, of course, who fucking wouldn't, right? Yeah. So I've just been watching it on YouTube in like one 7-hour movie of someone playing through the whole thing, and I'm just watching. I'm like halfway through it, and I'm so far like there's been some really cool, good, fun, neat stuff. But also a little let down so far. Like, I thought this would be cooler, or at least a little bit more coherent, but I feel like it's getting a little bit better as I go on, so I'm excited to see the last half, finally.
I'd be interested in what you think when it ends.
When it wraps, yeah. Are they going to make more, do you think?
I think that game did very well.
It didn't. So it didn't. They discounted it very quickly. Yeah, no, the game underperformed, from what I understand.
Well, I mean, now it's not cool anymore to kill Nazis.
No, it is. It is awesome. It is incredibly
well,
cool.
We know it's awesome.
Unbelievably
but, I mean,
cool.
You know, the cultural zeitgeist is.
Yes, unfortunately.
You know, that we should be nice to Nazis.
Unfortunately, yeah. Opinion is split, but they're wrong. They'll come around.
Yes.
They'll come around.
The physical kills in that game, and there must be like 20 different ways that you can kill someone physically in that game, are glorious.
Like,
well, chopping them off at the knees and tripping them and having them fall onto a spike and cutting half their head off. And
right, yeah.
Game where you can defile corpses is a plus for me, because that is no longer a thing that you can do anymore. These goddamn Call of Duty games that think that they're so cool and realistic until you walk up to a dead body and try to hack away or put additional holes in it and the body stays fresh is unacceptable.
I mean, I don't...
But Wolfenstein, you can go to town.
Realistic? I mean, did you play that World War II one, like, at all? They're using guns that you wouldn't be, like... There's, like, trigger mechanisms right. And shit that wouldn't it's be invented the, for, like, 40 the, years.
It's a joke. I understand. That's my point.
I know. I just wanted to talk about Call of Duty.
I just want dismemberment as a mechanic to be back in my video game.
You want Soldier of Fortune.
That's exactly what I want. Two. Soldier of Fortune.
That's,
two.
Yeah, I was about to say,
modern
two.
Graphic engine. Make it happen, games industry.
You want to point
make
the camera down.
Make rating earn something.
You want to point the camera down, pull out the Bowie knife, and just hack off limbs, right? That's
perfect. It's cool if they're Nazis, they deserve it.
Why are we going to read about you in a newspaper in like 5 years, Daryl?
Not 5 years.
Jeez.
And I'll be quick with these ones. On PS4, I'm finishing up Horizon Zero Dawn, mm-hmm. which... I'm loving to death. The story is super, super cool. Mm-hmm. And
Elise's face bothers me. I don't know why. It's just, she has a weird face.
It's a
face.
Little unreal. There's something like there's something about the proportions of her face that make it almost uncanny valley. Like there's a little David Cage to it. Like too real, that kind of thing.
They did go for the hyper realistic for their engine. Yeah.
It's also the open world Hanzo simulator, and encouraging people to be a Hanzo is to be frowned upon.
And I'm also getting my dusty tokens in Gravity Rush 2.
Right.
Trying to get that out of the way. Now that they've extended it by 6 months, there is less of a, you know, immediacy to it.
Okay.
I really wanted to like Gravity Rush the first one, but I just could never get the hang of the controls. It just always felt awkward to play.
Well, I'll let you know the controls in part two are no better.
Great.
It still is a tremendously frustrating game to control, but it has got wonderful characters, and that kind of keeps me going with it.
I've been watching people play some Gravity Rush too. I think it's because they were shutting down the servers, everyone kind of went back to it, and there was a brouhaha, and now they extended it, so people are sort of putting it back on the shelf until it's about to expire again, and then... In 6 months, they'll be back.
It's rough, too, because that game was only a year old. So Gravity Rush has never sold well in America. And that, you know, you only had a year to buy this game and then get these tokens. That was kind of rough.
What's the point of the tokens?
They get you sort of talismans and little extras and buffs and such for the game. And once you get 6,000 of them, that's kind of all you need. And you can get them in large chunks. Like, you can get on there and get, like, 500 at once.
Hmm.
Or in a couple of rounds.
Right.
So, and there are some really nice communities on there with people who are helping everybody out, getting those tokens. So,
So, there's content locked behind the tokens, and they're pulling down the only way you can generate tokens?
Well, you can get the tokens outside of the online segment, but the primary way you get them is you'll come across these boxes and people will take a photo and then send it off to another random person. And they say, here it is. Here's a picture. If you find it, you get 80 tokens and that person gets like 60 tokens. And you have to find these then randomly in the world if you don't, if they shut
one
down
at
the
a time.
Servers. Yes, one at a time. If they shut down the servers and
you need thousands
and you need thousands. Well, you need thousands of Tusty tokens. You get 80 per one of those. And so it'll be very hard to get them afterwards. Not impossible, but very, very difficult.
Huh? That sounds really kind of annoying.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't have the online the segment, yes, really annoying.
Right. And then you've also been playing Breath of the Wild, right?
I have been playing Breath of the Wild slowly. In a couple of years, I'll finish it.
Yeah.
I did finish the Mario game, which I...
Oh, yeah? Did it take you a whole 45 minutes or so?
Yeah, I was disappointed that it was, like, 8 big worlds.
Yeah.
And they were all kind of done with kind of quickly. When the game ended, I was like, I thought this would be like the halfway point in the game.
Me too.
Like, I thought this was the point where, oh, now you go to space and now it opens up a whole bunch of other stuff. But no, now there's like no reason to really want to play it because all you do is go back through the same worlds and find more moons.
Yeah. I'm only just now starting to see like, hey, Mario Odyssey was a little bit of a letdown kind of takes. And like, I was let down by it. I was like, this is way too short and honestly doesn't seem that imaginative. Like, there's whole worlds that aren't very good. Like, I didn't like the lunch world and I didn't like the Poison Island world. Those are two. That's like a third of the content. That game was people fucking loved it and they talk about it like it was the most incredible Super Mario game ever made, but like, there's a small contingent of people who are like, yeah, that was kind of a letdown. really
I was
short.
Definitely let down.
Yeah.
I was never super into Mario 64, so maybe that's part of why.
I mean, I loved Mario 64, and I think that's a better game. Like, I think that one feels like there's more to do in it. Because there's more levels, and they're scattered around more, and, you know, it's not just these eight big things, and that's it.
And I would prefer if they had more worlds that were smaller.
Yes. Right.
Had more stuff going on in them.
Yeah, it feels like more. It feels, and maybe it's a case where, like, well, you're getting kind of the same amount of content, it's just fewer levels, fewer distinct spaces, but those distinct spaces are meaningful to the point where it does feel like you are getting more out of this. Like, it's a more satisfying experience. You know?
Yeah, I really like Super Mario 3D Land for that reason.
Exactly.
It was designed as a portable, and you got a lot of, you know, distinct stages.
Yeah, I personally, for whatever reason, I guess it's not really considered, like, one of the better games, but 3D World for the Wii U.
That one was good too.
And also incredibly satisfying. Like, took me a week or more to finish. Like, had a lot, and like the post game were three more like rainbow worlds with like 10 levels each in them. Like, it was a lot more content after the end of the game. Like, it, I don't know. I feel like I'm in opposite land on the Mario games. I thought 3D World was great and Odyssey was kind of shrug, but. anything else?
Because I'm up with the times, I'm finally getting through some of the other Phoenix Wright games that I've missed, you know, keeping it to one thing per platform. Like I'm finally getting through, like, Apollo Justice, and that is only an 11-year-old game.
Are you playing the remake?
I was asking. Sorry?
Are you playing the remake?
No, I'm playing the original, because I bought the original back then.
Ah.
And have it there, and so I was asking Daryl and Clarissa, like, about the digital ones, because I never got those.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit of Justice, and what is the other one?
Dual Destinies.
Destinies, that's it. Yeah, and I still have Edgeworth to get through, so getting my Ace Attorney on.
Right, excellent. Yeah, those have been all on sale, I think.
Last week.
Ago. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So I've been hearing about some Ace Attorney. cool, all right. Well, and finally, Daryl.
My 64-year-old father, who has played and beaten through every single Dark Souls game, and only started playing video games for the first time, like, you know, within the last 3 years or so, has needled me into playing Neo Complete Edition, for which, as of right now, as this recording, he has 563 hours in. So I have beaten at least the base game of that and need to go through the DLC at some point. But yeah, he's surpassed me on that one because I keep getting distracted by major releases here and there. Mm. So right now, Dragon Ball FighterZ just came out. So, you know, I had to curtail my return to Street Fighter V Arcade Edition because, you know, each thing keeps coming out like, oh, Tekken 7's on hold, Killer Instinct's on hold, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then so that's the fighting games are just, you know, this nonstop cavalcade of content after years and years and years of drought. And then as far as the opposite end of the spectrum, I'm playing like a bunch of strategy games on PC, XCOM 2, Total War, you know, that Civilization, you know, stuff like that. I've been eating up a ton of my time. Clarissa mentioned Overwatch. As of literally right now, there's a brand new event in Overwatch for me to grind through and, you know, get some fancy pants outfits and not improve mechanically whatsoever in that game.
Your dad needs to start a Twitch channel of a 65-year-old Trinidadian Indian guy.
Yes, I think
Neo.
That is a good idea.
He needs to get his Mountain Dew sponsorship. And
yeah, that's one of those things is that, you know, you have to have like enough viewership. And, you know, once you're over the age of 20, you're over the hill in Twitch land, I guess. that's the rules, I suppose. Yeah. But yeah, in between that, I mean, I'm just sort of like trying to pick through like Final Fantasy 12 came out on Steam and bought the remaster on PS4 and never opened it. And now I have the Steam one. And, you know, so that was another one I was meaning to get through. So for me, it's more just like backlog, play this for an hour and then be like, I'll get back to this and then never get back to it.
I think I have this sort of delusion in my mind that I'm suddenly going to have like a lot of
infinite free time someday.
Right.
Someday to finish up all this stuff. And
yeah, that's why I've been trying very hard not to buy too many more games unless it's something that, like, you know I definitely want to get to fairly soon. Like, you know, I know I want to get to Persona 5 as soon as I can get through FF15.
Yeah, I bought Persona 5, never started it. You know, bought Yakuza 0, then Yakuza Kiwami, and now Yakuza 6 is coming out. Haven't touched any of them. Re-release of Bayonetta 2 is coming out on Switch in like a few days, and I never started on Wii U, even though I got like the super editions of all that. But
I had a friend come over who looked at some of my PlayStation 2 games that I hadn't opened, and she said, these are now more valuable unopened. You might as well just like play an emulation of them. These are actually valuable.
Yeah, huh. What games were actually more valuable sealed?
A bunch of these like old weeb RPG things.
Yeah, okay. So like low print run shit from the mid 2000s, like, you know,
a lot of that stuff that, you know, went out of print really, really quickly.
Radiata Stories or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got like Agarest War, the box set that came with the Titty Mouse pad.
There you go.
Yep, important work.
Yeah, totally. Man, I have almost completely fallen off of Overwatch. I haven't played it in a couple of months, I don't think. My character is Mercy, and they've fucked that character.
And they've made it so that you can actually run someone other than Mercy without being yelled at, so I can't really diss the fact that there's no instant resurrection anymore.
Well, it's fine. I don't necessarily have a problem with it, but they just keep fucking with her mechanics, and it's not so much fun when I every single time I boot the fucking game up, it's like, all right, why they change this time? Like, it's not, you know, I don't know.
They said they're not planning to make any further changes in the near future because they've got to rework Hanzo next as sort of their next big item.
Oh, really?
You mean by delete him?
I would hope they're contemplating, do we just get rid of Scatter Arrow entirely and replace it with something that is less likely to infuriate people, or do we do something else? They have not decided that yet.
Yeah.
You know, I think Mercy's in a much better spot now.
I think I'll get back to it at some point. I just need I played 40 some hours of Assassin's Creed Origins and haven't quite finished it yet. But I got to a point where I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like.
Ubisoft formula game.
Yeah, it was fucking amazing. That game was great, but by the end, I hope it's near the end. I was like, all right, maybe I've had enough of this. So after that, I had like a bunch of shit to play and wound up just finishing SteamWorld Dig 2, which was really good, by the way. If you're looking for a decent Metroidvania, that game is great. And then moved on.
I have no shortage of decent Metroidvanias.
Well, that's the other thing.
Amassing.
The next thing I went on to immediately afterwards is Iconoclast, which just came out and is a Metroidvania. I really love Metroidvanias. And then another one came out like last week that looks really good. That's where you're not running, you're like leaping from platform to platform. It looks cool. People are saying it's really good. But like, man, if you put a Metroidvania in front of me, I'm probably going to play it. So like, I think now I'm stuck in that.
Yeah, right now I'm basically thinking to myself, at some point Bloodstained is going to come out and I back that Kickstarter. And so that'll eat my life. up entirely.
So the thing is, I was so underwhelmed by the demo of Bloodstained that I'm not
really
anticipating it. Yeah, those pre-rendered fucking sprites look awful. And it's just, they're taking the same crab, and it's a green crab, or red crab, or blue crab in every level. Like, I was just not impressed with the visuals. And I would say a full 50% of the appeal of Symphony of the Night, my favorite game of all time, is the aesthetic. So
they did change up the visuals of it in the time since the demo, because
I
they
hope
keep
so.
Posting like videos of like, hey, here's what we did to fix the shaders, and we're doing this with the art style. You know, like that's something that people brought up that they've been addressing.
I will take a look at the most recent footage and see if it's changed enough for my taste. But what I saw looked like, it looked like Crusader No Remorse.
Hey, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, right. So yeah, that's like... But you know what I'm talking about. That pre-rendered kind of alias... palette swapped enemies and alias pre-rendered sprites. I don't think it looks good at all. I wish that game were 2D. I wish it were just fully 2D. But oh well, what you gonna do?
You know, maybe I'm out of it, but was Bloodstained like the last video game Kickstarter that got like a lot of people excited, I think that was the last one that I remember my group of friends discussing, because like Mighty No. 9 devastated Kickstarters for video games.
Well, I think in the time since then, there's been other sites like Fig, which are dedicated to, you know, game crowdfunding while also having like equity stuff. And there are things that do well on that. And I say that as someone who is, you know, Pillars of Eternity 2 is about to come out. And so that made, you know, quite a bit of money. Now, whether or not things are making millions of dollars, that's another story. I haven't really been keeping up on that. But yeah, there are like, part of the reason why you aren't seeing so many big Kickstarter crowdfunds is because there's now a game devoted one and some other means as well.
Did any of y'all back Shenmue?
Hell no.
No. Now, I like Shenmue, but I don't have any... I don't think that they can make
more.
Especially not on the amount that they were asking for. And that's when I think people start to get disillusioned by the Kickstarter goals, when it started becoming clear that, hey, this amount you're asking for is not really the amount you would need to finance a game. Bloodstained's guilty of this too, even. But, you know, you're kind of just using a crowdfund as advertising, and I think that kind of soured people on it. That and some noteworthy failures, as previously mentioned. So I'm pretty much just sticking to the ones that I know are like from people who are like, this is the game we're going to make and it's going to cost this much, and they have a good track record of doing it. So it's basically In Exile, Obsidian, Other Side Entertainment, Snapshot Games, Obsidian, Double Fine to a much lesser extent. But yeah, stuff like that.
Right, because I mean, to make a Shenmue game, he'd need like a $200 million.
To do a good one.
To do a good one. Unquote good. So
when that game comes out, I wonder if people are going to be like, "What the fuck?" And it'll be like, "This is what you get."
I hope it shatters their dreams. I hope it makes them realize that their love for those Dreamcast era games is a lie, and they should just embrace Yakuza as the way forward.
It's like there's a big warehouse with a forklift and some boxes, and then outside there's like a pagoda with an old man and a girl, and that's it. that's what they were able to make on the budget that they had. Okay, we've spent 40 minutes now talking about not anime, so let's talk about anime. 2017 just happened, so the next question that I have for y'all that I have not talked to about anime in more than a year is, what was the best anime that you saw in 2017, Daryl?
Wow, my short answer is In This Corner of the World.
Okay, that was kind of mine too. But it felt weird saying it because it's a 2016 film.
Right, but we didn't get to see it until 2017. Same thing with like Your Name and stuff like that. And
yeah.
So, you know, if we're counting it as year of production, because we live in a world where simulcasts are sort of the norm, but film releases lag behind just because you can't, it's still difficult for Japan to do the simultaneous film release. You know, we're inevitably behind on the theatrical side of things.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel bad for those. I don't feel bad for Your Name, but I do feel bad for In This Corner of the World, because
right,
from what I understand, even like critics that I talked to, colleagues of mine, were like, well, I loved that, but I'm not putting it on my top five of the year list for reasons. And their reasons were always like okay, but I get it, but like all you're doing is denying this movie the chance to be seen. Like,
yeah,
this is the kind of film that needs the promotion. It needs you. It needs people like us to say, yo, watch this fucking thing. Do not miss it. And if we can't say at the end of 1 year, this was the best thing I saw, that really takes a bite out of it. So I feel an obligation to make sure that people see that.
I mean, I legitimately believe it. I mean, one of the things I do for ANN is I write these sort of almanac retrospectives of things 30 years ago that hold the test of time, or 20 years ago, or some interval of time. And there's no doubt in my mind that 30 years from now, people are going to remember that movie.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it was a passion project that they, you know, like the story of that movie's production is a struggle. And I feel like it did not get its due. And that weird release schedule is a big part of that. You know, it had the misfortune, I think, of coming out too close to Your Name. And also the staggered release schedule really did it. But that's cool. What would you say for a TV anime?
TV, wow, there were so many major things. I'm actually going to be a basic bitch and say Attack on Titan Season 2. I know a lot of people were really big on second season of My Hero Academia, but mm-hmm. for my money's worth, I think the big My Hero Academia moments are going to be in that next season that we're about to get.
Right. Well, you read the manga, right?
I do read the manga.
So you know it's coming. Like
to get myself hyped up for this third season, I'm like, let me go back and reread the whole thing from the beginning. And I've burned through 100 chapters of that thing already.
It's so good.
It's so great.
I'm just happy to be into a shonen. Like, it's been a while since I've, like, had a shonen to watch. Like, one that was really good. And, like, I really got into it from the beginning. You know? And, like, yeah, it's nice. That show is great. So Attack on Titan Season 2, I feel like that's not a basic bitch answer, because almost nobody put it on, like, number one or number two. Jacob did, but he's, like, he's like a
but the
huge
reason
champion.
Nobody's putting it on there is, like, if you say I like Attack on Titan, there's going to be someone who's like, oh, what a normie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like saying Star Wars was your favorite movie last year.
Yeah, which is what I just said, you know, but I don't yeah. care. What are they going to do?
What's your favorite burger? McDonald's? Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing's better than a 39-cent one, not even the Big Mac.
But, I mean, Attack on Titan was such a small, like, it's kind of a weird thing, because, like, it took forever to come back. When it did come back, it was tiny, you know, 12 little episodes, right? And that's it. And it only aired for a few months. And it did, you know, My Hero Academia ran for a full 20-some episodes. It felt like a blip, you know?
And that everything feels like blips in the TV side of things, though, if it's not still.
Yeah, absolutely.
Airing.
Yeah, absolutely. You're totally right about that. But the first season lasted a whole 6 months, and the hype was that big the entire time.
I'm shocked, Daryl, because I was sure that your choice would have been for Vatican Miracle Examiner.
I mean, Vatican Miracle Examiner is a fun show, and I think people like kind of give it a bad rap for saying like it's this psychopath logic sort of show. And to me, it's like, okay, yeah, it's definitely got its leaps of logic and flights of fancy, but it's not like it's so much more out there than like the typical airport Dan Brown thriller that you would find. Like, it's not that out there, guys. Yeah, it's out there, but it's not like super duper crazy town.
It has the one triple Hitler thing. It has that one thing.
Yeah, it's like, you know, okay, there's, you know, one decapitating clown, one, you know, maybe they don't quite know what the side effects of certain stimulants are, you know, stuff like that, that I can condone. I was a big fan of Blood Blockade Battlefront and Beyond.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I'm finally catching up on that. And
ingenious.
I really like it. We just finished the first season.
Yep. The second season is basically just because the original manga is just standalone stories. And so for the first season, they were like, okay, we will skip past all these standalone stories to tell an original story for the anime. And so the second season is just like, okay, here's all the little stories we didn't originally animate in season one. And they're all great. And I won't spoil it for you since you just said you haven't watched it yet, but you're about to start.
All right, excellent. Well, those are all really good picks. Anything else on that list?
Oh yeah, there's plenty of stuff on the list. I mean, you know, certainly, My Hero Season 2 was great. I'm a big fan of Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma.
Right.
I'm really glad that the anime is from the same people who brought us Vatican Miracle Examiner, Food Wars. But that's another one where it's like it's a shonen thing that I've been into kind of sort of at the ground level and just followed it straight through. And I'm caught up with the manga and the anime comes out and it's a like pretty much a spot on adaptation, or like, you know, right on. They're not like screwing it up. So I'm enjoying that one immensely. And it's also not like a traditional like fighting, punching people kind of shonen. It's like the broader aspects of like, you know, what shonen can be, which is, you know, sometimes, you know, the pancakes are so good that cause your underwear to explode violently off your body and orgasmically. And it's fun for the entire family.
All right. Excellent. I like those answers. Clarissa.
Sure. So, I mean, I think in terms of like quality, I think obviously In This Corner of the World is amazing and it's hard to really top that. As far as TV shows, we have been watching Land of the Lustrous, which has been gorgeous. And really good. I'm
just
hoping
solid
I don't
as
know.
A rock.
Yes. I don't know if they've announced another season yet, but hopefully we'll get another one. But I enjoyed Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid a lot more than I thought I would. I didn't really expect to like it that much, but it was surprisingly delightful.
Right.
Yeah, that was a super sweet show. I really enjoyed that. And I'm not a big fan of the KyoAni stuff.
Right.
It's not like any other really KyoAni show, really.
No, it's not really. And then I think... probably other than that, I mean, of course, in addition to the stuff that Daryl already mentioned, let's see.
The sequel to Sayuki that came after all these years.
Oh, my God.
that just disappeared, I guess. Sayuki has just dried up.
I feel like Welcome to the Ballroom has really picked up and gotten much, like, it's really hit its stride, I think.
Oof, really?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because all you heard was people trashing that show.
Yeah, that's the first praise I've heard for it in months and months and months and months and months. It was a little awkward having to go back and re-interview those guys. Because last year they came to a couple of cons. One at the beginning of the show's run and then one like nearer to the end of it. And it was a very different interview the second time around.
And of course, like I think... although Vatican Miracle Examiner is quite fun, I think my pick for like trashy good time has got to be Kakegurui.
Man, I just started watching that.
I just shotgunned through that show over the weekend.
It's so good.
Yeah, I watched the first two. It's so entertaining.
It's that kind of trash that I love.
Yeah.
If I don't even consider it trash.
Yeah, it doesn't seem trash.
Like my jam.
Right. If your thing is Crazy Bitches, the show,
yes.
That is the show. I love it.
I mean, it's very much like the Akagi sort of Fukumoto manga rather than the Kaiji sort in that it's like reminiscent of that like 80s Chion Fat God of Gamblers style thing. Right. It's a gambling, Kakiguri compulsive gambler.
The main character, you know, wins all the time instead of their life is
instead
suffering.
Of like, yeah, like getting making increasingly poor judgmental calls like Ito Kaiji does. But yeah, no, tremendous fun. Incredible production to it, and I'm really glad that a second season's on the way.
Yep. Yeah, I wish we'd. Yep. I do wish we'd had it last summer, because last summer was
that's
a
the thing.
Bummer.
When I watched it, everyone was like, "Get with the program, Mister. Waiting for it to be, you know, legally available, nerd." And I was like, "I had stuff to do."
Yeah, I wish that Netflix wouldn't like hold that stuff back for so long.
I think you're probably going to see less of that rolling forward, but at the same time. I am of the mind that like there, like the way things currently operate, you can complain about it, I guess, but like they're gonna do whatever the fuck it is they want to.
Right, and if we, sure. Notice, yeah, that, I think like, we forgot to even mention Little Witch Academia because, in part, you know, the delay.
Yeah, right.
Also, I mean, also, Netflix didn't make or fund Kakegurui.
No,
they just licensed that while they did fund Devilman Crybaby.
Sure. So that's this year.
Technically, I know. Technically, they didn't. They're a distributor for Devilman Crybaby. Aniplex paid for Devilman Crybaby, yes.
Oh, so you're going to have to pay hundreds of dollars to own that on Blu-ray.
I mean, Netflix paid paid to distribute it. They paid to distribute it, but it is an Aniplex project from what I understand.
Oh, I thought they were a producer. My mistake.
Yeah, I mean, they're only listed as the... they're not listed in the production credits. It's Aniplex and then one other company, I think, and then it's not Netflix. Okay, we were very harshly corrected on that by somebody because Mike put it in a review that, like, Netflix paid for this, and somebody was like, and so I fixed it.
I'm glad I've got that right. Yeah. That was my thought, was that we got the entire show because they funded it. But
I don't know. Like, I couldn't tell you the exact nuance of it or whatever, but I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that it wouldn't exist without Netflix's participation, but maybe that is. Maybe that is an exaggeration. I don't know. It doesn't really matter though.
Yeah.
It does exist and it was great.
Yep.
So I'm very excited to watch the rest of that finally, and I'm happy there's more coming. Gerald, that brings us to you.
I'm gonna take this show, even though this show was mostly 2016, but it ended in 2017. I'm going to go with Rakugo Shinju.
Mm-hmm.
The end of that show was very, very affecting for me.
Yeah, and, I didn't consider that like a 2017, like, but if it was, then yeah,
it definitely counts. Definitely counts.
I really enjoyed that show greatly. I know that some people have some issues with it, but it's not enough to affect
discount the show particularly.
To discount the whole show, yeah.
I don't really hear too many people be like, "Oh, Rakugo." No, everyone, you know, it's like. Maybe they're like, "What's Rakugo?" or "Go see Rakugo." Those are the two.
Yeah, as we've discussed on this show, the problem that everybody has with it is a scene at the very, 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 very end that everyone just says, "Ignore it." And that's just ignore that scene, and you're fine.
Yeah, 99.998% is tremendous.
Yeah,
I can forgive that one little bit. Maybe.
See, I thought you were going to say Garfield was your show of 2017.
Oh.
No, I enjoy Umaru, but it's trash. I enjoy it. It's silly. I mean, I enjoyed Kemono Friends way more than I thought I would.
And yes.
Yeah, me too.
Surprising. I thought that was going to just be garbage, but I guess the
it's sort of charming garbage.
Well, I think some of the when it was made, I guess the game was, you know, canceled.
It was already a dead game.
So, yeah, it was a dead game, and so some of that sort of seeped into the production, and so it's got this sort of beautiful melancholy to it that I quite enjoyed.
Right.
Yeah.
I love it's like a really interesting kind of like quietly post-apocalyptic.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, that's what's good about it.
Like, yeah, it does not involve 50 episodes of gondola steering to get to it.
Yeah, like, I didn't think it, like... I don't know. Kemono Friends, I feel like it should have bored me to tears, but it didn't at all. I was really into it.
I think brevity is its weapon there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like, I was just thinking about that with, like, Kakegurui and, like, the incredible pacing that it has. Like, I feel like the 12-episode thing really is a boon. Like, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's like, this doesn't have enough story to hit to 12 episodes.
Right.
Or you're cramming really too much story into these 12 episodes. But I find a lot of the time, it makes for really propulsive pacing.
Right. I mean, that was one of the show had many problems, but like the Ace Attorney show came out and that show moves. That was one episode per case almost, or at least I remember some of the early ones were. And I'm like, this needs a little bit more time to breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Like when your entire courtroom case is like 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Then that moves pretty fast. I also was this a 2017? Was Tiger Mask Double 2017, or was
it
2016?
Okay, I mean, it's a kind of like you could sort of argue it either way, but yeah, I think it ended last year.
Okay,
this is 50 episodes.
I enjoyed that quite a bit.
39. I'm sorry, what am I talking about? I watched that show.
39. Yeah, and I do not give a shit about wrestling. Do not care one single bit about it. And I thought that show did a very good job of bringing in people who knew wrestling and didn't know wrestling, and Tiger Mask is, you know, just a fun character in general. I guess I'll go with the most controversial choice of the year. A show I did enjoy, which was Maiden Abyss. And
oh, I thought you were going to say Handshakers.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say Handshakers.
Oh, yeah.
Like 100%.
Instagram filter the show. Yeah, so,
No, Instagram filters are not that ugly.
And now, as I checked, Tiger Mask was 38 episodes. I was wrong, not 39.
Also, Made in Abyss is not a controversial choice. It was on the top of most lists last year.
It's just Dave Riley who doesn't like Made in Abyss.
Look, anytime you bring that shit up and then people are forced to defend it, that's when it gets dicey. That's when it starts getting salty, is when you start bringing up the creepy shit in Made in Abyss. And then people are like, oh, well, I just overlooked that because the story is so good. And you're like,
I love the show tremendously. There were maybe one or two moments that I noticed that I was like, yeah, this you can tell the mangaka was really kind of skeezy. But the show itself, the last two episodes of that show are heartbreaking.
I really wanted to like that show more than I did. Like the end is it really picked up, but I feel like that's one of those shows where, you know, with anime, like so much stuff is made for the younger audiences. And so I'm kind of used to like, all right, well, fine. All these characters are technically teenagers, but whatever. Like, but I feel like Made in Abyss is one of the few times where it's like, I really feel like, no, it actually like negatively impacts my enjoyment of this show that these characters are supposed to be like 9 or whatever.
Yeah. It wasn't on my best of the year list. And like, I acknowledge that show has some really incredible atmospheric production design, and the story is really effective.
I love the setting.
Yeah. The setting's like, great.
The atmosphere
is great and everything, but literally every episode has some kind of joke about a child's dick or children being naked or being tied up and naked or somehow naked somehow, or I'm going to look at your balls casually. I'm a stranger looking at a child's testicles, that kind of stuff. Like it takes it out. Like, sorry, I'm not into it. And so you take me out of your production. Also, that show had something else that's like a super pet peeve of mine, which is what I feel is wallowing around in the destruction of the innocent or destruction of the good. Something like you ever see Chappie? It's kind of like Chappie. That
I like that movie.
Yeah, sure. No, I'm not saying plenty of people love it. I'm just saying, like, I think that when a director or a writer or whatever wallows around in how cruel society is to this innocent thing, that's fetishism, and I'm not cool with it. I'm not, like, I don't want that in my entertainment. I'm aware that the world is a shitty place and that humanity is capable of unspeakable cruelty, and like, have seen plenty of it in my life, and like, don't want it in my entertainment. And especially when you like really hammer on it and wallow around it in a lot, nah, man, this is fetishy stuff. And I don't mean sexually. I just mean, like, you know what I mean when I say fetishy.
Yeah,
like,
you mean you don't accept Justin's invite when he says, "Come on, let's go marathon Nobody's Boy Remy."
Yeah, no, I don't. And you know, that kind of thing. And it's a personal choice, but like, I do think there's a valid criticism to be made of, like, you are wallowing around in this too much, and then I shut the fuck off and walk away, because like, you're not gonna get me with this. Like, you're not gonna make me feel bad for a whole day because you're trying this hard to make me feel bad. You know, like, that's, I think that Made in Abyss tripped that sensor for me, and so I had a hard time with it. But yeah, that was my feeling on it. I'm kind of happy that more people are now kind of saying that and being willing to say, like, yeah, I had some problems with this show, you know, without condemning it, I think, or without saying like, oh, it's not appropriate or whatever. Like, nah, it's whatever, but you know, it's not for everybody. That's all.
Oh, and I did enjoy the Shigeki no Bahamut Virgin Soul, second season of Bahamut. That was also very strong, I thought. I guess that, what's it, that Mobage money?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mobage.
Yeah, microtransactions carry the day.
Oh, man. Like, they can make that show look so good. Like, that show looked tremendous all the way through. And, I mean,
I have some quibbles with some of the decisions in the writing at the end, but overall, I quite liked it.
Yeah, that was what I heard. Yeah, that's what I heard chiefly, was that show was a huge letdown because of the ending.
I mean, you know, what a thing that has not let people down, it technically counts as last year. I don't know if anybody is watching the current season of the Garo anime, Vanishing Line.
No.
Oh. No, I'm behind. I haven't watched any of the Garo anime yet.
I would actually say skip straight to Vanishing Line because
really? Okay.
They're all distinct from each other. The way that Garo is set up, you don't like need to watch this one and then watch that one and then watch that one. It's like Garo is just like, you know, effectively, you know, you think of it like Pretty Cure. It's like, just watch this. Yeah, that's how my mind operates, right? Like equating Garo with Pretty Cure. But no, it's like unique setting, unique cast, you know, unique aesthetic. So yeah, I would jump straight into that one, I think, because honestly, one thing that I didn't like about the previous seasons of Garo is that they were period pieces. And the original Garo was like what sort of set it apart after Sense was that it was in a more contemporary setting. And so this Vanishing Line is in a contemporary setting, but it's the perfect anime setting, which is Japanese envisionment of America. Mm. So that's so, and this is, right
so this is, this is meant to be a continuation of the Garo, like adult tokusatsu show, right?
That's correct. Yeah. It's all so, related to that. It's that same concept of, you know,
which is sad. Cause I guess that means that the adult tokusatsu thing never took off. So
I mean, they still make Garo
live action. Really?
It comes out, you know, still, I think, like, maybe not like right this second, I don't think, but I mean, okay. Yeah, Garo,
I thought that was that the only thing. And
no, there's like a million Garo productions. I don't know.
Yeah.
All of
they
them.
Always have a big, they always have a big booth with live action stuff at Anime Japan every year. I don't know off the top of my head whether or not there's a live action Garo airing right now, but I know that it is a successful franchise.
Hmm. Okay.
Otherwise, there wouldn't be dozens of series.
Right, there wouldn't be done, and they wouldn't. Actually, no, they just released a movie.
Ah, there you go.
So I think it might have been one of those like TV show compilation movies. I don't remember, but yeah, it's like one just came out like last month.
Well, if it has a guy, you know, surfing a car on fire in the opening, then I'm there.
Great. Okay. All right. Well, those are all pretty good picks. Y'all keeping up with Winter so far? Winter 2018. Anyone?
To an extent, I mean, there's not a whole lot that's currently, like, in the current season that I'm watching. Like, certainly Pop Team Epic is, like, you know, gotta watch that, like, as soon as it comes out.
Shit's good.
Michiru Neko.
The darkest show, yes.
Yes, surprisingly the darkest show of the year.
Yeah, I don't know. The only thing I'm really keeping up with is, I guess, Pop
Magus
Team
Bride.
Epic. Magus Bride? Well, yeah, Magus Bride, Pop Team Epic. What the hell else am I watching this season? There's something else. Oh, Darling in the Franxx, but I'm just watching that for, you know, to see what it does.
we are watching, I guess we're finishing up, I decided to watch Devilman Crybaby with my anime family. Mm-hmm. I'm very glad I did.
Yeah.
And we are finishing that one up, and I've loved that tremendously. I can't
talk about Devilman with anybody because they're like watching it piecemeal and the rest of us like burned through it in a day.
How could you stop? That's what I want to know. Unless you're under
willpower, and I don't.
It was tough, but we're watching it as a family, and so it makes it better.
I'm not in the family, just for context.
This isn't your.
You could be. You could get on Rabbit with me and attend via the internet.
That's not. But you're not okay. When you say anime family, you do not
like
mean
he's got a club meeting.
You do not mean your actual biological family.
Oh no, I would never watch it with them.
Okay,
hey mom, come here and let's watch Devilman Crybaby together.
I'm pretty sure that Gerald's mom would be into it, but
keep your eye on the guy in the coat. well, anyway, that's exciting. I don't know how you stop though. Like, holy shit.
Man. Yeah, that's, I never thought that there would be a time in my life that the internet would be full of people talking about Devilman. Mm. Holy crap. I am so happy.
It was just you guys for like,
for a long time. Yeah. It's fascinating. And I think maybe some of the Twitter questions might have touched on this. I didn't read them in advance because I like to be blindsided. But yeah, like since we've been podcasting for like 12 years, you know, we've seen the world turn in some aspects.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
certain things that like nobody cared about. Like now there's this resurgence and people like, you know, now that you can see Legend of the Galactic Heroes, lots of people going out and doing so. And, you know, you don't have to evangelize for certain things anymore because like it's out there.
You still do need to evangelize for that stuff.
I mean, yeah, I do.
Right.
I mean, it was to a much lesser extent, but like when Goshigan, the Time Atranger, got a re-release, people got interested in that again. Mm-hmm. And I got to, you know, be a jerk and be like, you know, we reviewed that show about 10 years ago.
Yep.
But But yeah, like Devilman Crybaby, I'm just very, very happy that, I mean, this year is going to be crazy. We're getting, for Go Nagai fans, we're getting new Devilman, we're getting new Mazinger, and we're getting new Cutie Honey.
Yeah, that movie comes out Sunday. I'm going to be seeing a Mazinger Z movie in the theater.
Like, and so I'm shocked that, you know, this stuff is happening now. I mean, I'm sure because it's on Netflix, Devilman Crybaby will have the greatest, you know, spread.
Longevity.
Longevity, yeah. Well, there's so much churn. I wouldn't say longevity, but the greatest spread.
Yeah. Visibility to people.
Devilman hit in such a way, I think we're going to be hearing about it for a long time.
Yeah. I hope so.
I think the big secret is just the fact that it was like not a delayed thing that a certain set of people saw it months ago. And, you know, we all got it at the same time, more or less.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's, and there's, you know, a small percentage of people who watch that Devilman who are like, I want to check out more Devilman. And those are the ones who are, in my opinion, the cool people. And, you know, then they go to back to the 80s OVA and then, you know, the 70s show, which is to think what they did on children's television in the 70s is tremendous. Like Clarissa and I are watching through that show. And like first episode, a guy dies by getting a spike through his eye and another guy gets spiked to a ceiling and his blood is just dripping all over the place.
Well, I mean, it aired in prime time. Let's not, you know, 8:30 p.m. on Saturdays. So the original air date for the 70s Devilman.
Okay.
It's like, you know,
groundbreaking Japan, in that regard.
Like Japan was watching this then and then America was watching the Funky Phantom and Inspector Chan and the Chan Clan. And
those are real things. We didn't make that up.
Some people Chelsea accuse and the us. Cats in space.
Yes, yes. We were watching, like, what were kids in America watching in 1972 versus Japan? Like, oh my God, Devilman
Help,
is so
it's
cool.
The Hair Bear Bunch.
Oh, Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
Mike Tool always used to have a story about the Hair Bear Bunch and that, you know, back in the days before YouTube, there would be people who would accuse him of making that show up that it didn't really exist, that you're just pulling our legs.
Wasn't there for some reason I have a vague recollection there was Dune Buggy, and then wasn't there also a series where Dune Buggy teamed up with the Archies? Wasn't there?
The Archies were getting into it with like a bunch of people who you would not expect Archie crossover with.
Remember Hanna-Barbera only had three ideas and they would mix those ideas.
That's true.
With every show. The only one that is off to the side is like Johnny Quest. Like,
right. And then everything else is like, well, we got to solve crimes or teenagers and we got a band and we're going to race against each other.
That's all. That's all they had. So for 40 years, Hanna-Barbera just did nothing unique.
Well, also basic sitcom. They also had basic.
Right, yeah. Basic, let's take the Honeymooners and reuse those jokes. No one will know.
Honeymooners, but the future. Honeymooners, but the past. Honeymooners, except actually the Honeymooners. I think maybe they made a Honeymooners cartoon.
And the idea of adding a laugh track to an animated show. What on earth?
Man. All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and get on to these Twitter questions? How about that?
Sure.
Sounds like a good
Lay
idea.
It on us.
Okay. From Twitter, Aaron Sarais asks, what do you think has changed the most about the state of anime discourse, trademark, in the 12 years since Anime World Order began? Congratulations on 12 years, by the way. I'll be 10 years old next year. Or Ancast. I will be older than that next year. Ancast will be 10 next year. Y'all will be 13.
All right, so to think back to roughly 2005, 2006, state of anime discourse...
It was really bad.
Well, what I would say. I would say the biggest change, because they're asking it changed the most, and I would say the answer is the proliferation towards the video essayist or like, you know, that sort of thing, like people who are primarily making YouTube videos to talk about anime in that format, because that format kind of didn't really have the penetration that it did before. Back like, you know, a decade and change ago. And I think now that's like one of the most influential things is that. So that's my answer.
Yeah, video essays didn't exist back then. Of course, neither did YouTube really. I mean, it just barely started out. It started out at that point.
Yeah. It didn't really hit big until, you know, Lazy Sunday, Saturday Night Live. People needed a way to see this Lonely Island video. And then, YouTube.
Y'all were around pretty much pre-social media for the most part.
Exactly.
Right, yeah. Before it. Because that change happened, I feel like everything about discourse changed in the last 10 years. Everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I think to a certain extent, I'm not sure how much of it is changes in specifically anime discourse, just so much as fandom and internet discourse overall.
Yeah.
And just, you know, the kind of combativeness of it. And the kind of instant access, especially like directly to people who make stuff that is enabled by like Twitter and such, just leads to people really not having any sort of manners or public comportment or
right. Yeah. Online discourse is anime discourse because anime is the most extremely online of fandoms.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's when you think about it, it's literally in 2005. The way we were consuming it was different. What we were consuming was different. The way we talked about it was different. The way we communicated with each other was different. Like everything about it, the content itself was wildly different. Like not wildly different, but different. Like everything about it has changed.
Well, I mean, 2005, I think one of the things we were rolling our eyes about was, oh, another harem show. Oh, another harem show.
Yeah, now we just roll our eyes at another isekai show. Like, but yeah, I mean, but then again, yeah. We were rolling our eyes at another harem show in 2005. We were rolling our eyes at another maid show in 2001. I mean, like,
yeah,
it, like, back then we weren't watching simulcasts. Right,
we were downloading, you know,
yeah,
stuff.
Everyone was pirating, yes. Back then, I guess, but there were no simulcasts, so you would have to catch up. The thing that existed was the preview guide. Right, that was still around, but like an A&N's been around that whole time, but in terms of like discourse, it feels like now it exists, and in 2005 it barely existed. Right, it was just the usual suspects writing about anime back then in print and online.
You have to go into a forum and you have to find like that community that you enjoyed, mm-hmm. and you know forums still are around today and they're still a big part of it.
Yeah,
but you know they were the only thing back then, mm-hmm. where you could sort of go back and forth with people online about it. And now,
yeah, I was
yeah because like 10 years ago, 2000s, like that's still not quite long enough ago that people were using Usenet. Usenet was still dead by then. So yeah, I would say online message boards were like the place to be around that time.
Yeah, like,
nowadays,
yeah.
It's not so much a thing.
Yeah, like we were flipping channels the other day, and like, I think it was The Incredibles was on TV. And I was like, I remember seeing this in the theater, and then you have to go home and get online to talk about it. You can't pull out your phone and just open Twitter.
Yeah, and just immediately beam your yeah. thoughts of The Incredibles. Yeah.
I got to go home and get on Cinema Discusso in the fucking Something Awful forums and find out what all the assholes in there thought of whatever the fuck it was I just saw. The Steven Spielberg War of the Worlds or whatever. Like, that was what you had to do back then. It was a very specific time, like a very thin slice of time where that was what you were doing. Was mm-hmm. go, like, you had to go to your computer to talk about the movie after you saw it.
I mean, I guess one thing I'm noticing, and I don't think it was as common then as it is today, is that, you know, some shows are sort of under this microscope where if they're not 100% perfect, then they're garbage. And I've seen certain shows that I think are pretty good get sort of, you know, tossed out.
Name one.
Well, we were talking about Rakugo Shinju. Where a lot of people, like, that one scene comes up so often in discussion. I don't know if that was as common back then. Maybe I just wasn't part of the discourse because I was on a bunch of weird forums back then.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. In the case of Rakugo Shinju, the ending was controversial, but all those same people, all the people that I know that were disappointed by that, still put it like at or near the top of their list for 2017.
Right, and that might be not the best example.
Yeah.
I kind of know
what you're talking about, but I find that like usually in those instances, if you probe the person a little bit more, they will give you more reasons why they are dismissing this particular show. Like, it's not.
I think maybe if I can refine that thought into something maybe that might be a little more relatable, I think people are overloaded with options as far as media for consumption. And so if they can find any reason to throw something out and not like have it on their consideration for a possible to watch, they'll take it. just because they need some way to pare down the list of things. And so if somebody like zeroes in on maybe like one bad animation cut or something like that, that becomes the representative thing for an entire show. And people are like, oh, that show looks like shit. I'm not going to watch it. You know, something like that.
Yeah, it'll get like a meme. Like the show will become a meme about how it's badly animated. And so then that's all you fucking hear about.
That's the only thing anyone you hear about. And then so people are like, oh, I don't need to watch that show. And some may be like, oh, that's not the case. Like, imagine if Trigun came under that sort of scrutiny, because Trigun has its incredible looking episodes and it's got its episodes that are definitely done by the B team. I don't know if it would have survived in this particular landscape under that sort of style of discourse.
Oh man, you would have seen so many screenshots of like Vash's like head turned around or just looking some really badly animated people in the background.
I mean, I think it depends. Like, I mean, obviously, like Yuri on Ice was hugely popular, even though that had a lot of really unfortunate animation due to the production issues. But you know, yeah, I mean, it's always a toss up.
Yeah, and some shows, I don't know how they do it. Some get away with it because like Yuri on Ice got nominated for best animation. And
I think that was also a kind of voting thing. And
yeah,
so
fan
I think
vote
a lot
sabotage.
Of, yeah, and so a lot of people, it's like, well, best animation. Like, well, I really like this show. It's my favorite show, so I'll vote for it.
I think in that case,
technical merit.
Hang on, I think there's something to be said about this here. That first of all, the animation flaws or problems in Yuri on Ice were blown pretty far out of proportion by people who were upset that it was getting a bunch of attention. The show had animation problems like every other airing TV show, but there was a crew of folks that I noticed who were very dedicated to making sure everyone knows Yuri on Ice doesn't have very good animation, and they fucking hammered that politically over and over again until that was one of the things where it's like that's a knee-jerk reaction that you hear to Yuri on Ice. Oh, bad animation. You hear that like a knee-jerk reaction.
That's the power that people have now that they didn't have when we first started our podcast. Right?
Yeah,
like a couple people couldn't force a meme so effectively through social media.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't social media.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time, that kind of criticism is going to float up of a thing like Yuri on Ice, which gets so fucking big that it's basically mainstream.
Right.
Yeah. Like, a property that size, you're going to hear every single thing about it. That's one of the things, like, if a property gets that big, you will hear every opinion, and some really weird ones will get promoted to, like, you hear it all the time. Because it's just so big, so many people, and you're hearing input on it from millions of people all over the world. You know, so it's almost like the sheer diversity and breadth of opinion almost introduces those kinds of things. A whole lot has changed. CC Takato asks, well, what kind of impact do you think the Netflix deal with IG Bones and Studio Wit will have on the anime industry?
Well, they certainly chose some very good studios to strike a deal with, just because independently of this deal, when you think of Bones, when you think of Wit, when you think of IG, you tend to think of, for the most part, quality productions. That being said, I'm
technically could quality.
So slightly dreading this upcoming Legend of the Galactic Heroes remake, but you know, it's IG maybe not necessarily bringing their A game from what I've seen so far, at least. But I think it's going to be good. I reserve to be proven wrong, you know, in time.
See, I don't have any clue with the behind the scenes politics of how Netflix operates, but if and again, like, I guess Devilman Crybaby is not a show that Netflix had any involvement in, as I was, you know, corrected on.
No. It's not that they didn't have any involvement. They just didn't, like, personally fund the production and dictate anything about it creatively. Like,
and if that is how they approach shows, then great. Because
they just say, here's the money, give us a show.
Which is, from what I understand, exactly what they have done with IG, Wit, and Bones.
And that's exactly how I'd want it to be, is just get stuff made, go wild. And
I'm with you in principle.
Unless you get Neo Yokio, and then all bets are off.
In execution, a team of artists is better with a moderating...
Someone is there to say no.
With a moderating force. And I'm not saying that that's Netflix executives. I'm not saying that that's Netflix executives. I'm not saying that anything other than when you say, like, just give the artist hundreds of millions of dollars and don't say no to anything, that's not a really great way to go about making a big movie. Like, if you did that with
how you get Wings of Rain,
like the career of Guillermo del Toro is like littered with movies where they did that. or at least
I've
it seems
my
like
mind
they did
and
that.
I decided it's good now.
or like directors who are allowed to be unbelievably self-indulgent, like
George Lucas prequel trilogy.
George Lucas,
no one there to say no.
Steven Spielberg.
It feels like Mamoru Oshii. No one says no to him. It feels like no one says no to him ever. And you know, guys like that. Miyazaki. You know, if I could watch Ponyo, tell me anyone's telling that guy no. Yeah, that kind of stuff. I feel like there's a line that you can cross where a moderating influence is good. Because it's not just a painting, you know, it's a whole film. So it's more than one person, more than one person's vision. But anyway, let's see here. I think hopefully it's really good for them and those deals turn out exactly how they want. And they're able to continue existing for a long time afterward, and Netflix doesn't totally fuck them. I hope that that does not happen.
Yeah, and if anything, I hope, you know, I think they also got LaShawn Thomas to do Cannon Busters, make a series out of that.
Yeah,
and,
that'd be neat.
Definitely looking forward to it, because I did see that one that he did through Kickstarter, and I was looking forward to it, if that's indicative of the quality.
All right. AngelXO3 wants to know, why has Sailor Moon, or even Cardcaptor Sakura's revival, aimed more towards just adult audiences instead of young kids, especially in merchandising? Unlike, say, Dragon Ball Z, the revival of Dragon Ball Z, which is more aimed at general audiences, including kids.
Is
Sailor Moon Crystal really like that firmly aimed at adult audiences though?
Sailor Moon Crystal,
the re-release of the original series is like, hey parents, here's the Sailor Moon you grew up with.
Yeah,
Sailor Moon Crystal was like the modern one.
Sailor Moon Crystal is aimed at moms who are raising their kids on Sailor Moon.
Because it's like, hey parents, remember this thing that you liked? Show this to your kids now.
It's on at a time slot, I believe, when moms could watch with their kids. So that is pretty much who that show it seems to be for is Japanese moms and their kids.
So the same logic can extend to Cardcaptor Sakura
to an extent. Well. I mean, like that show is we remember the 90s,
right? Like, remember back when you know everyone was watching this. Here you have it again.
Like they're literally just making more
disposable income.
Yeah, they're just making more Cardcaptor Sakura.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was gonna say. Is I mean, of course, like all of those kids that watched that when it was new. I mean, they have money now because they're adults with disposable income, I mean, you see the same thing with like some of these like revivals of like retro like robot shows and Go Nagai stuff is like you get like, we're going to make these like $200 like Soul of Chogakin, you know, robot toys because all of these guys that watched this show when they were kids are now, you know, making tons of money being computer programmers or whatever and will spend all of this.
They definitely don't have any kids of themselves to spend any money on. but I mean, it's funny you should bring up the Go Nagai stuff because I think that is far more in line with that sort of a question. Because like Mazinger, that the original show was definitely at like 6-year-old boys.
Yeah, and now, new Mazinger stuff is all aimed at old guys.
It's Mazinger Kaiser like had straight up nudity in it, and the things you know bled and were ripped apart and gruesomely like that is straight up that is made for adults.
Yeah, and Devilman Crybaby is definitely not like aiming for the kids audience. You know,
well,
why not show it to kids? What's wrong with it?
I mean the Go Nagai stuff. It seems like that was as rough as you could get for its time, you know, in early 70s, you know, children's television.
Mm-hmm.
Like Devilman and Mazinger and all that stuff. Like, this is as much as we... Like, Go Nagai always seemed to be like that. Was like, let's just push things as far as we possibly can and then have the censors pull us back however far we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so... But, yeah, I thought that, like, the Sailor Moon stuff, I thought that was squarely, like... and certainly Cardcaptor was squarely, like, this is still for kids, or at least... can be watched by kids.
Yeah, Cardcaptor doesn't feel like it's been aged up in the slightest. It feels like the same fucking show. Now, they've been selling merchandise, Cardcaptor merchandise, to adults since the original show came out. They serve both masters with that show, but I feel like the show itself is firmly for kids. Like, very much for a family audience. That's what it feels like.
In the case of Dragon Ball Super, you know, that's such a long generational thing. You pretty much have grandparents who grew up on Dragon Ball that are now showing Super to their, you know, grandkids, you know. So
yeah,
Goku
that's, yeah. And that's a family franchise to begin
with.
Yeah. That's a family franchise. That would be like if they, you know, of course, Now that I say this, they just hired the fucking Game of Thrones guys to do a Star Wars movie.
Star Wars.
Yes. But if they had said, like, we're making, like, just out of nowhere.
I've never made a movie before. Yeah, guys, like, who don't have a good track record for writing their own shit.
Yeah, or like, but I guess the comparison is, if The Force Awakens had been announced as an R-rated movie, right. Everyone would be like, what?
Right. It's like, you know, not everything has to be, you know, comic books, yeah. Direct market.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what those horrible DC OVAs are for.
I watch all of those and like them.
I watched some of them. The really bad ones. Did you watch Gotham by Gaslight?
I never even liked that original book, to be honest. I think it was just an aesthetic, and I'm kind of mystified why they were like, oh, we're going to make a whole... We're going to adapt this comic. And I'm like, oh, whatever. I didn't really think the Elseworlds was all that years ago when it first came out. But yeah, that one did just come out. I didn't watch it yet. But,
they got
the Wonder Woman one. I wish they'd made a TV show of that.
I never saw the Wonder Woman one. But Gotham by Gaslight had... it's like a character actor voicing Batman who voiced him on some other show. He's like... He's not... It's not Kevin Conroy, and it's not...
Yeah.
Anybody else? It's but he's like a character actor. He plays like dad in like half of everything.
Oh.
So it's really yeah. Like he's like the substitute teacher or the coach in a lot of stuff, or like the good-hearted military guy, like the good military man.
Huh.
So the Batman voice was throwing me because I was really used to seeing this dude.
Yeah. I was sad when like it seemed like they kind of chucked all of the, you know, regular like DC animated voice actors and then replace them all with like different people for.
Well, I think the rationale for that was, hey, we don't want to appeal only to old people. And like, you know, Kevin Conroy's the old people one. And then they cast him for Justice League Action, which is the kids, you know, Justice League. But yeah, it's the guy who is Admiral Pike in the new Star Trek movies was Batman.
Yes. Yeah. That guy. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to think of one of his bit roles.
And he was actually Batman in the Young Justice show.
That's what it was. Yeah, Young Justice.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah. So it threw me. I didn't watch Young Justice, but I've seen a lot of movies that character actor is in. So it threw me.
I liked Young Justice. I was sad that it got canceled.
The one you don't want to watch is Batman and Harley Quinn. That is the one you
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
Do not watch that. Anyway.
I've heard rough things too about the Killing Joke.
Yep, don't watch
actually,
that one either.
That one is better, but I don't actually like the Killing Joke.
Daryl.
Right. Well, these are just awful. Alan Moore. So.
I never liked that book, and so I think the cartoon is better than the book because I think Mark Hamill went for absolute broke on that one, like as like a what he probably thought it would be like his last hurrah.
Yeah, and it's a shame that he was let down so bad by the rest of the production.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but you know, it's still better than that comic.
That comic, I somebody handed it to me when I was in fifth grade, and it fucking traumatized me.
Fifth grade's probably the time to read it.
Maybe not. I don't know. Chu Odori wants to know, with Record of Lodoss War getting a new manga adaptation and the original light novel being republished in Japan and for the first time in the West, would its story stand the test of time if it were made into a new anime adaptation compared to more modern fantasy series? Well, I don't know when Ryo Mizuno wrote the next one, Record of Grand Crest War, but that has a current anime that is airing right now, and it seemed to fall in line with a hell of a lot of other light novel anime that were not isekai, so just fantasy novels, basically.
Yeah, like basically that fantasy setting right now, it's like if it doesn't tie into being trapped in a multi, you know, player RPG, things have a harder time. I think, you know, there were some because we mentioned, Bond. It's a bad example because that's a MOBA game. But yeah, I mean, Lotus. I mean, this is from an era back when you could sell fantasy novels by transcribing your D&D session.
Mm-hmm.
That's
very
like
literally, yes.
Literally, that's what happened there. And then, you know, the subsequent Lotus works have always sort of not been like the super popular things in the West. I think a big selling point in the West for the original Lotus War was its aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And subsequent Lotus War have never really captured that aesthetic again. In the alternate parallel world where the Lotus TV show looked like its opening credits did, you know, that would have had a shot at, you know, standing the test of time. But I think, you know, each of these more subsequent Ryo Mizuno works is pretty much trying to be more modern. It doesn't have like that, you know, artwork style reminiscent of like, you know, your D&D Dungeon Master manual.
If it opens with, you know, Parn fighting a guy on a cliff, and then Parn uses his only attack, which is
to run straight forward and yell.
Run forward and yell, and the guy steps aside. Parn falls off the cliff and dies.
The rest of the show is no more Pyrotess.
If the rest of the show, yeah, then that's great.
Pyrotess and Orson.
Yes.
And Deedlit, right.
Then it's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, frankly, I can't. If you told me, like, hey, they're making another record of Lodoss War, I'd be like, oh.
So, okay, that's nice. Yeah, because I never, but again.
No, not like, oh, I don't care. Like, oh, that's totally expected. That's not a surprise at all. No. They will make anything they think will make money. So.
Sure. Right. And for its time, that was a thing that was like a gateway anime title because you could put it in front of your D&D circle and be like, hey, check this thing out. And people would generally watch it and enjoy it because it was recognizable to them.
They watched the first episode.
Well, that's the secret. First episode's the best episode.
You were saying that subsequent episodes of Lodoss War did not stand up to the first one.
When I reviewed Record of Lodoss War years ago, I was like, listen, let this thing remain a memory for you.
Watch the first episode, though. It's still really good. But everything after that is like, eh.
not so much. But, you know, Something's, as far as the big OAV productions of its era, you know, that's been almost, that was like 1990.
Mm-hmm. A+ closing credits. A+.
Oh, yeah.
It feels like more Lodoss War should be something that would be easy to market over here because there's been like a big, you know, uptick with the visibility of like quote unquote geek culture or whatever, and you know, people being into D&D. And
you need someone to market it who knows what to do.
Yeah, you need someone who like knew their way around.
Get Felicia Day on it.
Get Vin Diesel to be the voice of everybody. Deedlit. Vin Diesel to be the voice of Deedlit.
Vin Diesel can be Parn. Yes.
Hey, Parn.
You know he'd do it, too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. You want to see an A+ Vin Diesel performance? Go on the Universal Studios studio tour.
Fast and Furious.
And go on the Fast and Furious Supercharged, which is, to date, the lamest theme park attraction I have ever been on.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's a high bar.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time at theme parks, but like, well, you know what? Lamest is a stretch, but it has,
but, you know,
it has some
Vin Diesel and Tyrese for this one.
Well, and Vin Diesel, like, you can tell when Vin Diesel doesn't give a shit at all.
When he's forced at gunpoint to do something.
When he's forced at gunpoint to give a shit. This one feels like they didn't have a gun to get him to care. It's so awkward. It's funny as hell, but it's awkward. Anyway.
How does it compare to, you know, the
Terminator,
XXX video of, you know, when Vin Diesel, you know, worked at Toy Fair and had to promote the Street Sharks?
I would say,
you know,
it's,
I feel like he improv'd that, so I feel like that was 100% him.
Remember, he was
no script.
Then. He was early in his career, so he was trying.
He was hungry.
Wasn't XXX The Return of Xander Cage last year?
Yeah, that was an awesome movie.
No, it was
100%
not.
His idea.
Yeah, you could, yes. You
That's
could,
why it's good, Zach.
That movie was the equivalent of someone saying, and then the hot girl's like, you're hot. And I'm like, oh, am I? And then I shoot the guy. Like, that was the whole movie. That is why it's good.
Terrific.
That is why it's funny. Doesn't he surf a motorcycle in that movie?
Hell yes, he surfs a motorcycle. It's a special motorcycle that he presses a button and deploys a mono ski, and you know, it's never talked about again. Only in the water.
And then there's a girl.
Put it on the poster, Zach.
And then there's a girl, a hot girl with glasses, who's like, "I play video games, and I think you're
like
cute."
Kenzie from Saints Row.
Yeah. It's Kenzie from Saints Row. I completely didn't put that together. Holy shit, man, Daryl.
Man, this is brilliant.
Yeah, right. We are never getting back on the show. You know that.
No, there's a reason why it's been years. We just forgot.
Super Deformed asks, now here's a question. Fuck, marry, kill Hayao Miyazaki, Hideaki Anno, Yoshiyuki Tomino.
Okay, definitely marry Hideaki Anno because insufficient direction.
Yeah.
You could live insufficient direction.
You have a guide. There's a guide. Nope. You know what you're getting.
You gotta kill Yoshiyuki Tomino because it's the only thing that'll stop him. And that leaves Mamoroshi as, you know, fuck Mamoroshi.
No, that's Miyazaki.
Miyazaki. That's right.
Can you imagine having sex with Hayao Miyazaki?
Just he never changes his face. Just has that same pissed off face.
It's probably just like having sex with Golgo, right? He just lays there.
As a matter of fact,
he's probably smoking the entire time.
Yeah.
You know it. On storyboards for his upcoming movie, Better Than Your Name. That's the actual title.
The movie's name is Better Than Your Name.
That's
and it'll gross.
He's so mad that, you know, he was allowed to make a movie that, you know, wasn't like his stuff. So he's like, show you, come back.
That did better than any of his movies, yeah.
That movie's going to make $1 more than Your Name, and then Miyazaki's going to die. And he's going to die looking right at Makoto Shinkai. He'll make the movie.
He'll try and let someone else make a movie, and he'll claw his way out of his grave.
It's
going to be like how Rao died.
Studio Ghibli studio so that all his animators could follow him into the afterlife.
Yeah, right. Yes, it'll just be, the Ghibli Museum is actually an elaborate tomb, and it'll be sealed after he dies. They'll seal him up in that bullshit like story of Walt Disney. Here's our fantastical animators desks thing that they have in there. That like total PR. Look at our magical workspace thing that Ghibli has going. Man, it's funny. Anyway, Super Deformed also wants to know, Daryl, what was your match of the year for 2017?
Very difficult question. You know, there's 2017, just for context, when he says match of the year, he means professional wrestling. 2017 was the best year, like, of all time for professional wrestling quality. I don't think anyone reasonable is going to argue that. Stuff that would have been, like, the best match of the year in another year might not even have been top 30. And so that's really tough to come up with. But if I had to pick one, just the knee-jerk basic bitch reaction, probably Kenny Omega versus Kazuchika Okada. Pick one. You had two bouts. Both were phenomenal.
All right. Also, Michael Leone wants you to talk about Road Busted for some reason. This is a fan parody of Writing Bean from a long, long time ago.
That is basically all I should really say about it without boring to people to tears. Basically, in the before time, it's interesting. In 2018, the 2000s, late 2000s, fan parodies have had this huge resurgence. You now have people who do fan parodies that are guests at conventions. They're really popular thanks to YouTube, and people, a lot of whom are becoming like aspiring voice actors and stuff, are going to fan parodies. I talked about Dragon Ball FighterZ. I think there are even parts of the localization of that kind of work in some shout outs to the fan parody versions of Dragon Ball. But 20 plus years ago, it was a very different scene altogether. This is back when people would cut things on VHS tape. So Road Busted was a parody dub of Writing Bean, which Anime Ego has had this evergreen title. They did the Kickstarter. It's a 45-minute OAV about a guy in his bitchin' car and his jacket that's bulletproof, and he does not give a fuck. And I highly recommend it. So this guy who did the video, his name was Bobby Beaver, used to copy tapes and make AMVs and stuff like that. I believe it was his car, but he had like an awful, tremendous piece of shit car. And so he just sort of rewrote this OAV, which was very car prominent, to be about his garbage piece of shit car. And, you know, this is the sort of thing that you would make not to get on YouTube, not to be seen by millions of people, but to entertain your friends. And so they'd throw in all these goofy-ass in-jokes, like having someone burst in and say, like, hey, I'm Carl Horn, guys. Hey, have you seen The Wings of Oniyamis? It's really, really great. And, you know, if any of you have ever met Carl Horn, who is editor at Dark Horse, to this day, he will still probably kick off conversations with, you know, hey, have you seen The Real Space Force? It's really, really great. And so that's the sort of thing that people did back then. It was not very well acted. It was, you know, the jokes are really stupid and dumb, and I kind of like that punk aspect to fan parodies and music videos and stuff like that. I think nowadays everything is too clean and too sharp. So that's my piece on that. I'm not sure why that has to be about Road Busted. I guess I have a copy somewhere.
Yeah. Is that on YouTube?
It very well might be, but the thing is that back then, because of VHS tape, it was very difficult for people to make the fanciful edits, and so they would usually just like run the entire thing and then talk over it. In the case of Road Busted, there would be like live action cutaways to the crappy car in action or something like that.
There are several copies of it here.
Oh, okay. So it lives. It has been preserved.
Nah, it's there.
I think you forced me to watch that like early in the time that we met each other.
I probably
You did. I remember.
I have. The ones I was forced to watch. Probably not Roadbusted, though.
No, you forced me to watch that.
Okay. Well, no, there must have been a reason, though. You might have met Carl Horn, and that might have been like, okay, let's watch this so you actually know who these people are. Because, like, you know, there's one part at the end where there's a guy with a gun in, like, a parking garage. And back in the days of Usenet, one guy, you know, every message board forum back in the day would have one person who just posted, like, 1,000 times.
Yeah.
You know, there was always that guy. Well, in the Usenet days, the guy who would post like 1,000 times, this guy named Enrique Conti, who actually helped. This is a fun trivia fact. You know, the first Anime Central, you know, they funded that by charging to his credit cards. So anyway, you know, there's a scene like in that where he's like, "I'm Enrique Conti," and you know, whatever, and because it's made by his friends. And so I think that might have been like a factor as like, you know, hey, watch this because you know maybe you met some of these people.
This will make no sense to anyone who wasn't on this forum during
That's the thing, is that that's what they were sort of made for. Just like, you know, dumb in-jokes among friends. And then a lot of the people who did that stuff, you know, as it happened to be, they'd move on to bigger things.
All right. Yeah, you can check it out if you want. It's kind of an interesting museum piece, but don't expect...
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's funny.
Do not expect sincere laughs.
In the era of Team Four Star and a bunch of people writing and a bunch of people casting and stuff, there's... No, in this case, it was like, hey, do you know a girl that we can get in front of a tape recorder to read this sentence? Mm. Like, that was the... era that Roadbusted existed.
Okay, we've dedicated enough time to Roadbusted. Bebop Shock wants to know, question for everyone, this is important, if you could pick the name of your stand, what musician or song would it be named after?
Ooh.
Gonna have to be Hino.
I think mine would be a howling pile of shit that's just called Anal Cunt.
All right.
You don't even like that band. Nobody likes that band.
No.
You just look at the track names for the song titles, and that's the entertainment that you get.
I would have the most garbage awful stand from the most garbage awful band.
Well, let's see. Okay, David Bowie's already been done. So, let's say, I think... I'm going to go with something that I think just sounds good. So I would probably maybe go with Zola Jesus or...
See, Clarissa actually listens to music.
Listen, Hino, with his creepy stare, would freeze anybody in place because Hino couldn't move.
This is a good.
That would be
process.
The stand's ability.
I think I'm gonna go with. Well, geez, because the minute I thought of it, I was like, well, no, I think I'd rather summon Trent Reznor in the Grail War.
Right. If you needed.
Yes, that's what. But what class would he be?
Oh, caster, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe berserker. Right, maybe berserker.
Well, I guess it depends. Is it buff Trent Reznor? Like yes. Current buff Trent Reznor?
No, I'm gonna put him under.
It's the frail, like all might.
No, I'm going with buff. Of course, buff. He's been ripped for like more than a decade. You got to give it to him at this point. I'm gonna. Yeah. Berserker, I guess.
Yeah, so I think buff Trent Reznor maybe.
Berserker. Yeah. The really frail one. Frail Trent is probably more like caster. Anyway, what a stupid conversation.
That's why we're on this show, to get the good, insightful questions.
Speaking of
I'm trying to think of, like, what would be the stand power if you had one for, like, how soon is now? Would it be, like, a, you know, time acceleration, maybe?
Well, I don't know. That's Morrissey, you know? He can go fuck himself.
Yeah, well, I like the Love Spit Love cover.
Look, I love at least a half a dozen Smith songs.
Cause you to bleed from your eyes.
Yeah.
Or be stabbed by the crow, Eric Draven.
It's you have a fire hose of black eyeliner that comes out of your eyeballs. Just
the day you die, Morrissey, in the name of all that does not suck.
Land of Obscusion wants to know what makes Gerald tick when it comes to games. Your thoughts and views on games is so wildly different from the norm that it's honestly refreshing to read something from a consistently different perspective.
So this basically is originating from the fact that you not only don't think Breath of the Wild was a Game of the Year contender, you think it sucks. And I bought it and never played it, so...
I think what he calls refreshing, other people just call... just everyone else is just calls exasperating.
Hmm.
Or contrarian.
Or I am never purposely trying to be contrarian. I always play these things because, and you know, Breath of the Wild, I think, is just what brought that up. Didn't do anything for me. I mean, what the issue that I have is something that someone else might acknowledge as a problem in a game, but is not a make or break for them, ends up being a make or break for me.
So for example, like a lot of modern game mechanics, like you don't care for crafting, you don't care for procedurally generated levels, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not a big, I don't like spending a lot of time like building my gun, and but
not
one
a
of the
fan
big,
of permadeath, etc.
One of the big things I don't like is weapons that degrade very quickly.
Well then you should not play the video game The Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild.
And that's my problem, is during an average fight in Breath of the Wild, your weapon breaks like three times.
I mean, no, and, but, you know, once maybe. And not even an average fight, but, I mean, and as you go on, that problem lessens and lessens and lessens, and yeah.
But I've been playing it for a number of hours, and I don't think I've had a fight where my club hasn't broken twice.
Yeah, you're using clubs.
Yeah, like you maybe have different durabilities that you use your good weapon for like things that are tough, and
the good weapon thing. The good weapon will break once. So
yeah, well, and then you get another one. Like, and if you're doing shrines and stuff, it's consistently giving you a feed of new good swords. Like once you hit, the first couple hours, you're right, are kind of challenging, but once you hit, there's kind of a loop you hit in that game where you're doing shrines, and you're getting new weapons, and you know there will be times where you're like, oh shit, I don't have a good sword, but that's pretty rare. Especially like once you hit about the halfway point, I would say you're always sitting on a decent weapon.
And I think I got some good swords and used them, and then they broke really quickly too.
And then they'll give you another one, and then they'll give you another frost blade or lightning blade or whatever it is.
Understand that. But that mechanic is a deal breaker for me.
Sure, I totally understand that. Yeah, I get
that. That is my thing. Like there is weapon degradation in Fallout, like the new Fallout games, but it happens much more slowly.
Yeah,
I mean, you're going there repairing your weapons every once in a while.
Yeah, I think pacing for like equipment wear is a tricky thing.
Right, like
it
can
be too fast.
Like,
I remember
System
that
Shock 2, it was way too fast, so you'd go into the INI file and set it to either to zero or set it way lower, and then the game became bearable.
Oh yeah,
I
remember
that. One of the things I hated, like back with Dark Cloud, was like the weapons broke like so quickly.
I mean, that was my problem with what's it, Dead Rising.
Like, okay, but Dead Rising, you immediately get items that like quintuple or increase it by like 10 times your durability, so you always have that katana.
I didn't. No, I got that katana, I used it, and I slashed up like 10 zombies and then lost the katana.
Now, like, Dead Rising is the king of, you know, you can hold on to your good weapon, then just get all kinds of crazy stuff, and then get all kinds of items that will extend the durability dramatically.
I didn't find those items. So, but again, like, that's my thing, is that was something that annoyed me more than anybody else. If we are sticking to the Breath of the Wild analogy.
Well, it's just like, you know, things on games that, you know, but it just, the gist of it is a lot of things that are like the hot trend in gaming, in modern gaming, are things that are like the antithesis of what you want.
Right.
Kind of, yeah. Sometimes, yeah. Like you were saying, like the permadeath, the crafting. I don't really like games that don't have like a point. Or like an objective. Like I played Minecraft for a little bit and I was like, I'm bored with this. Like there's not like a point to this. So,
and Minecraft is now like the second highest selling video game of all time.
Right. Exactly.
Yep. Well, all right. You just have very specific taste.
Very.
Okay. Ford DM wants to know, you have an interview and can ask Yoshiyuki Tomino one question. What do you ask?
Why are you such a failure?
Yeah, that's my tool's question. It's at what point did you realize you were a failure? And we think that Tomino would actually take it in stride and answer truthfully. I don't think he'd actually pull a gun and kill us, but that could also happen.
That's a gamble, though.
It is a gamble, but it's a Kakigurui-style gamble that we're willing to take.
It is, yeah. Well, you're living for the thrill at that point.
yes.
I mean, I'd love to have a candid interview with the guy, but...
Sure.
We don't... I mean, that's our problem with, you know, we don't speak Japanese, so we always have to have a translator. And the way... I mean, you know, I guess you guys get translators and such, but, like, we have... You can't have, like, a conversational interview with any of the guests.
You
like,
can.
You have to ask... Well, not us.
You kind of can. I mean, you kind of can.
Like, we are asked very specifically, like, what is your question? Like, it has to end in a question, and that makes them very formal and very short.
Huh. I mean, like, it depends on, look, I think this depends on your translator. It totally, 100% depends on your translator. I've had translators who are translating what I'm saying as I'm saying it. And in those instances, it feels relatively conversational. Now, I know it's not the same thing as like an actual conversation, you know, where you're just going back and forth. But I feel like you can get close. Now, would you be able to do that with someone like Yoshiyuki Tomino? Probably fucking not.
Well, the beauty
I would say
of
no.
Interviewing Yoshiyuki Tomino is that people ask him basic questions and then his response will, like, it's not like people give enough rope to hang him. It's that he will spin thread to turn into a rope to hang himself if you just ask him like a simple question.
How's it going today? Well.
Well, you know, back when I decided that I needed to assassinate, the head of Sunrise. So
yeah, right.
Permanently, you know, be immortal.
I'm thankful for Yoshiyuki Tomino.
We are as well. Yeah. I'm certainly thankful for him, but he's also crazy.
Yoshiyuki Tomino on our show.
No, I mean,
yeah, I think basically the reason this question we went straight to Tomino is that we've spent like the better part of like the last year and change like reviewing some of his more infamous titles with Mike Toole, and that may continue.
Cool.
in 2018.
I mean, those shows are good. You should. No. Your episode. Let me clarify.
Oh, those episodes.
Your podcast episodes involving those things are good.
Okay.
I did not mean to insinuate that Wings of Reason is good.
Everyone go watch Brain Power.
I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea here.
I did have someone respond and say, like, are you serious? Is there really a line that says a woman's son is basically her lover?
Yes. No, we are not joking.
We are not joking. That's
and
a real
they,
line.
The dub actors were very confused when they had to read that line. They asked Sunrise for clarification, and the response they got from Sunrise is, dude, we don't know, and nobody else knows either.
Custom Zaku asks, is Darling in the Franxx the inevitable product of current anime trends?
Well, Darling in the Franxx is certainly a anime trendy show. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's inevitable product of current anime trends, because I don't believe they're not trapped in an MMO, and there's no like what's the other big current anime trend? Like a Little Sister Complex. I don't know if there's too much of that necessarily in there, but Darling in the Franxx is certainly
go ahead.
Yeah, it's certainly a show that seems like it's latching on to like the perception of what people want.
Darling in the Franxx feels like here's things we know people like. Let's put them all together, and especially Rebuild of Evangelion.
Right.
Anyway, all right, we got our last couple questions here. Kaoru Fan wants to know, what is your favorite recent anime that nobody or almost nobody watched? Mine was ID0. Yes, I mean it.
Well, for me, like, it's hard to say, like, you know, nobody or almost nobody watched, like, because we all live in our own bubbles. And so for me, like, the first thing that comes to mind is I really enjoyed 91 Days. And I did not see anybody particularly talking about it, but it did get a physical release, so it must have had somebody watching it. But I thought that show was super solid, possibly one of my favorites of the year, if not my favorite of that year that it came out, which I think was probably 2016 at this point. I can't remember. But that's like a quick one. But, you know, if you wanted to get like the super scrolling down to like the obscure things on Crunchyroll side of it, I would say The Glass Mask Year 3 Class D. That was like 2016.
That was tremendous. That was beautiful.
Brilliant show. Nobody really watched it. Right. But I loved it.
All right. Cool. Gerald?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I really loved Samurai Flamenco. Not a lot of people seem to watch that.
I thought that was reasonably popular, unless that was one that was like sort of defined by like people saying like some sort of one-off dismissal, and then everyone like didn't watch it.
That one had a bad animation dismissal. It had a bad animation dismissal, but it has a cult. It definitely has a cult following, and I still hear about it every year. I feel.
Yeah, I love that show. It was tremendously fun. It seemed to change genres like every five episodes.
Mm-hmm.
It was great. I don't know. I kind of live my life just in these like weird obscure shows, or at least shows that I don't like, shows that, you know, not a lot of people seem to talk about.
Clarissa, do you have one?
I'm trying.
That's a good question. I was trying to think about it. I mean, I guess there was Guta Guta Fairies, which certainly is not like, I mean, we knew people that.
Right. I think like it's limited to like the people we know are the ones who are really big into Guta Guta Fairies. And then outside of that, it's like, the hell is wrong with you?
Mm. What is this thing that's the best animated CG anime ever? So,
well, those are all pretty good picks, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always important for anime fans like to venture outside of like the top like five things on the most popular board.
Yeah,
because there's, I mean, if you consider yourself an anime fan, and if you're listening to this, you're an anime fan. Like it's really important to widen your horizons and go, you know, dig deeper, because sometimes you'll find like your favorite show is a show that no one is talking about.
Yep, that can happen.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's like a show that I'm like super crazy about, but it didn't seem like I was watching Yamishibai, which didn't seem like a lot of people were talking about. But it's you know, it's a kind of fun watch, but it's, you know, nothing like amazing.
Okay, all right. Moving on here. Last question. Boneheimer wants to know, this sort of circles back around. He wants to know, when is Anime World Order going to move to video essays?
Have you seen us?
You guys look fine. What are you talking about?
Well, I look fine. I'm fly. But no, like the thing is that there is a technical difficulty around video essaying, and there's a lot of hidden tricks and hidden rules that if you don't know them, they're not stated anywhere, but if you don't adhere to them, you're going to get that YouTube copyright strike.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of people who, like, when they do the video essays, they know all kinds of little tricks, like whether it's duration, whether it's putting like a little border around the clip, whether it's, you know, putting things in a window or cutting away. Like, there's some ratio of stuff that I don't know all those rules. And then on top of that, like, I only just like purchased Sony Vegas from like that Humble Bundle, and it was like $20 rather than $300.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I technically I have the tools. We've got the cameras and all that stuff. Do we have like green screens and stuff? No. It could happen. But the thing is like, it's a totally different skill set than I've got. But we all recognize, like we said, when the very first Twitter question came in, like that's where the discussion in the audience has migrated, is to that video essay format.
Which is sad, because I don't actually know.
I think that's overstating the case quite a bit. I think you're dramatic.
Depends on the demographic. Because certainly our demographic of like people in our 30s, like our show exists and it does well. And people find us. And we like to, as Gerald likes to use the analogy, be like the Velvet Underground of, you know, anime podcasting and such. In which case, you know, you influence the people who then go and create, right? So we are fine with that. But it is a very Saitama One Punch Man style of thing, in the sense that, you know, nobody knows who you are. And luckily for us, we don't really care if nobody knows who we are. But yeah, I mean, the video essay format, there, like when you just look at like kind of people, like in terms of raw numbers, it's like some of these individual videos are like, you know, huge, hugely popular. But yeah, I don't have any plans to do so, but I probably should look into it.
I would argue that compared to other mediums like film or video games, anime YouTube is
small by comparison.
It is peanuts by comparison, I would say.
I don't even know any channels off the top of my head. Like,
I don't either.
It's peanuts. It's not that these people aren't successful. They are. It's just that when you're talking about successful YouTubers, anime YouTubers do not come close to the actual successful YouTubers. That's not, again, it's not a slam or anything. It's just anime is a pretty small field. And not only that, like, in my anime Twitter bubble now, you know, I run a fucking publication, so like my take on this is a little different, but like, we don't do video essays at ANN because they're very expensive to produce. If you're a publication, we don't have those kind of resources, but we're doing fine. Our stuff does fine. And we don't, like, in my conversation, my discourse, I am never referred to YouTube videos ever. No one ever links me to watch this YouTube video for an opinion that I think is good. I don't get that.
No one ever does.
I get links to written pieces and Twitter threads. That's what I get.
We were at a con some years ago,
and we were it was like a con where they had a whole bunch of like anime online guests, and in this group were some YouTubers, and we'd never heard of these people. And then I went to check out their videos, and their videos had like 250,000 views.
Yeah, you can do well, and so those people have an audience. It's, just, it's a big, diverse audience. There isn't just one place. Like, the idea that everyone is moving on to another thing is not correct. That's
well, sir, we're living proof that that's not correct.
That's not quite correct.
Around.
The idea that people are just going to stop reading completely and move none of that is accurate. The idea is, like, all there's space for all of this. The audience diversifies and grows. And so I think, like, it would be smart and good to try and develop good, high-quality video content that you want to make, that you think is good, that you think has a shot at distinguishing itself. But the idea that, especially in y'all's cases where, you know, this isn't your full-time job or whatever, you know, the hobbyist thing that you're doing seems to be just fine to me.
I mean, again, in addition to that, like I said, I've been writing for Otaku USA Magazine for, you know, 10, 11 years now, and that's a print publication, which even at the time we launched, people were like, print is dead, man. Everyone's going online. Well, evidently not, because we're still kicking.
Well, yeah, but you stuck around, and you stuck around for a long time, and it's the market is as such where it can support that kind of a publication. I mean, ANN is a little bit of a weird outlier that it still exists in its current format and is still supported in the way that it is. Like, it is kind of odd.
There was no pivot to video for ANN.
No pivot
necessary.
To video, nothing. And do you know the pivot to video thing? If you actually look at all of this stuff, pivot to video is something largely demanded by idiot shareholders and was not the right move for most of those
right.
publications.
Like all the people who did that, they didn't really benefit.
They did not benefit from it. You saw literally like double digit audience drops for Mike and Vox. Like those places really suffered after that pivot to video. Now, I'm not saying we avoided it because we were smart. We didn't move to video because we couldn't fucking afford it. Like that's really expensive.
No, but, well, I was going to say too, like it is expensive. Like video, I think it's more expensive and more challenging to like put something together that's decent.
If you're a publication and you want to get into video, you got to spend a lot of money on a production pipeline. And unless you're going to bet the farm on that in the instance of a small publication like ours, you need to be willing to bet the farm. My boss isn't an idiot, nor is he a risk taker, and he wants us to have jobs. So he doesn't do shit like that, and I'm thankful for it.
You guys even tried video like years and years
we
and
did
years
we
ago.
Tried yeah it was an extremely ill-considered and ill-fated attempt at licensing anime a while ago, and if we had like if someone came in right now and said I'm going to invest X millions of dollars into ANN, we would probably launch a video initiative, but that's kind of what it would take, and that would be an experiment, and I don't think the expectation would be on it to make any money for like a while. Like, that's kind of how it goes.
Right. I was actually even talking about, like, the time when you had used to have, like, the guy that went over the headlines.
We've experimented with it. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. That was a month-long experiment or something.
Yeah, we've done a few different things, and, you know, we'll dabble. I'm not saying, my point was that not that ANN is interested or that it's purely strategic and that's why we're not really doing it. I'm just saying that the idea that the only audience is for video, the entire audience is migrating over to that, that's what you have to do. That is weird hype. Isn't borne out by the numbers. And I don't think you all have to move to video essays to remain relevant. I don't think you do.
Right. So basically what I was going to say is, speaking from the fan perspective, where I don't have to worry about any sort of monetization concern or any sort of, hard set schedule. Like, you know, the people who are doing it for their livelihoods, like they have to churn out content on a regular basis. Like, as far as video that I would like to produce, certainly I would, in a perfect world, want to just basically like re-engineer a lot of my anime convention panel content in terms of video. But the main impediment to that is just the various DMCA, copyright strike infringement things. So that's really like the answer to the question as asked in the Twitter thread was that we would have to figure out how do we do what we want to do within the confines of like the restrictions on the platform that everyone's already like accustomed to using. I mean, alternatively, if you put up your own videos on your own platform, now it's like, oh, well, guess what? It's Bandwidth City. So that's really like the figuring out that question would be like, all right, well, if I knew how to do it, then I'd consider getting like the technical know-how to actually implement that. But until such a time comes where I don't get YouTube copyright strikes for putting up 7-second clips of me on Japanese television, you know, which happened, by the way, you know, it probably won't be anytime soon that you'll see like an extended, like a 10 plus minute video of me talking about something and having video examples of it as I'm talking about it.
Yeah.
We're very bad at this. Like, we don't even have a Patreon or anything. We haven't
trying to make a living at it.
We realized a long time ago, like, the audience that we have is about the world that is interested in the stuff that we talk about.
Well, I mean, it's not so much you only have to do the one thing that everyone else is doing, and that if everyone says this one thing, then you have to do the one thing. Find the thing that you're good at, find your niche, and stay there, and if you can get paid to stay there, awesome. You know, that's pretty much how it goes.
That's pretty much how to do it.
All right, guys, that wraps us up. Listen, it's always an incredible amount of fun having you guys on. I don't think I'll wait as long until I have you on again. Thank you so much for coming back. It was a great time. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right, well, great to be here, and that's it, I guess.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Thanks again.
Okay, that's our show. Huge thanks to Daryl, Gerald, and Clarissa for showing up. The theme song has been caressed. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, subscribe to us on Stitcher, subscribe to us on Google Play Music, and leave comments and reviews and stuff. You know, that stuff helps us out. Thank you very much, and I'll see you all next week.